Welcome to the Swim and Tell Spotlight. I am Jamie Bailey, and today we've got Coach Ben Lewis here. First season as Arizona's head coach, coming off a crazy successful run at UNLV. Five conference titles, multiple Coach of the Year awards, and his teams were known for massive improvements in the water. Coach, I'm excited to have you on.
What's up, Jamie? Thanks for the invitation, man. It's good to be here.
This will be a lot of fun. I'm excited. I'm excited to riff with you on this stuff. Okay, so this is your first season at Arizona.
Yeah.
And the program, you know, it just moved from the Pac-12 to the Big 12. So, but what was it about Arizona that made you say, yeah, this is the move that I got to make after eight seasons at UNLV?
Yeah, it's a question I've gotten a lot this year from everybody from family to recruits to, you know, to athletes currently coaching and formerly coached, you know, so it's an important one that I've thought a lot about. You know, it's always major life moves, Jamie, are always a combination of factors. There's no doubt this is a major move professionally and in life. You know, it's well, I mean, I think there's just one obvious thing to state, and that's, I mean, you know, when I was coming up through the ranks of coaching, I mean, you know, a lot of my heroes as coaches and athletes swam here. Like the legacy of this place is hard to deny. And that's important. You know, that affects culture as well. But, you know, more than anything, and I'm sure we'll dig into this later as we talk about improvement numbers, because that's kind of your jam. But like, you know, I challenge my athletes wherever I've been. It's like, yeah, you gotta grow. You gotta look for new challenges. You gotta embrace hard things. And if you got two pathways in front of you, the one that scares you a little bit more is probably the one that's probably the one you got to look real hard at. And that for sure was the case here. You know, this is a more challenging path. As you said, things were in a good groove at UNLV, which I'm really grateful for. And man, I mean, I would be remiss if I didn't just like tip my hat, not only to the athletes and coaches I got to work with there, but just to that place in general. You know, like I wouldn't be the coach I am without the years I spent there as an assistant. And then, you know, the years I was blessed to have there as a head coach. So.
Yeah. UNLV, there, it's a mid major, but it's a really high end mid major. And you had some incredible talent when you were there. And now this move to Arizona, now you're in the Power Four. You're in the Big 12. So, you know, you've been coaching a while. Do you think there's more pressure put on Power Four coaches to win right now? Or is there pressure pretty much, you know, everywhere in college swimming?
There's definitely more pressure. Yeah, for sure. I think there are a lot of places in collegiate swimming, although less so than there used to be. But I still think there are a lot of places in collegiate swimming where if you're keeping your nose clean, your athletes are, you know, giving you, you know, kudos at the end of the season on their reviews, and you keeping a good team GPA, like it's possible to settle in. But I think in Power Four, that's not true. Like if you don't produce results that are in line with what the athletic director's expectations are, then you won't have a job there anymore.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. And when you were at UNLV, your teams, they had some of the biggest time drops in the country. You know, that's how you can win, right? You can either out recruit everyone, you can out develop everyone, or you can do some combination of both. And I think at UNLV, you did both. You did it really, really well. So, you know, when you're at Arizona and you're looking at recruits, what are you looking for in recruits? Do they need to have those, you know, Big 12 A times now, B times? Are you looking for more diamonds in the rough? How are you evaluating those recruits as they come across your desk?
I mean, I think the evaluation of them is, you know, it doesn't really change no matter what level you're at. You're looking, the ability to get athletes to improve is always based on many different factors. So it's a system, you know, and only rarely do you find an athlete that's checking every single box on your list. But being really intentional about having clarity on that list, what you're looking for, and checking as many of those boxes as possible before you pull the trigger and make an offer of a spot or a scholarship or whatever, like that's a part of the process. And yeah, you know, I'm really blessed right now. I've got a great head recruiter, our associate head coach, Peter Richardson. He and I really operate at different ends of the spectrum. He's a let's do it fast, and I'm a let's do it right, you know? And so we meet somewhere in the middle, and we push on each other a lot, which is great. You know, that's important because I'm trying to check every box. You know, I'd love to be 99% sure before I pull the trigger. But you know, a few years ago, I was listening to a podcast talk about like a 60% rule. I think it was like somebody famous in business. You know, it was like Warren Buffett or something like that. It was like, look, if you wait till you're 99% sure, you're going to miss the opportunity. Like when you're 60% sure, like you got to go. If it's 50-50, well, keep digging. You know, but you know, it's, you know, if, but don't wait till 99 either. You know. So anyway, I mean, to get back to your question, like, you know, what are we looking for? I mean, it's you know, there's physical tools, there's improvement curves, progressions. As you well know, like part of your business is evaluating like what kind of system they're coming from and how does that mesh with the system they're moving to. And then there's the character, because there are some definitely some characteristics and some mental tools that we find do correlate with people who can improve. So we try to evaluate all those as exhaustively as we can. Meanwhile, while building a relationship, I mean, that's it too. You know, it's like at the end of the day, it's not just numbers. It's like there's got to be a vibe. You know, you got to have a relationship with the athlete, and they've got to want to have a relationship with you. So.
I remember you and I we talked many months ago, and this was when you were at UNLV, and we were going through all of your swimmers and how they had improved. And I remember telling you, it's like you haven't missed. Like it's like everyone on your roster was having pretty much was having all these big time drops. And we talked a little bit about, you know, how you recruited and where you recruit from. Has that changed at all? You know, you're in a different school. You're in a different, you know, I mean, you're still out west, so I know you've still got a lot of really good relationship with some of the West Coast clubs and stuff. But ha has the recruiting philosophy changed at all?
You know, I yes and no. I mean, I think in terms of what you're looking for, like you're always trying to level up your program. You're always looking for somebody who's flying under the radar of the teams that are ranked higher than you. You know, like so, you know, maybe there's a threshold, Jamie, that I haven't reached yet, where it's like every top level athlete just kind of is knocking on your door. I'm sure that's true for Bob, and I'm sure that's probably true for Todd. I mean, you know, so okay, you know, so there's probably some threshold out there, but that's only the, you know, top one or two or three teams. That's it. You know, I think everybody else, it's like, yeah, you're trying to recruit somebody who you know, you have high degree of confidence can move the needle for your program competitively, that you want to work with, that you feel confident can get better, and that is, yeah, like I said, is somebody who maybe Virginia didn't have a spot for him, and so you're talking to him, and you know, but you believe they can be at that level, you know, and so that's something that doesn't really change. And when I moved from Division II to Division I a decade ago, I think I wondered that, and I found out that it was the same, just a level up. And so I was more prepared for this move. I feel like it's the same tools exist. I'll say that there's maybe one thing that's changed a little bit, and that just has to do with the programs that I took over. So when I took over UNLV about a decade ago, like they had fallen on some hard times in terms of their depth, their overall development as a squad. So there's a couple really talented athletes at the top, but you know, they had gone from a team that had won like 10 out of 11 conference championships on the men's side to a team that was squarely in the middle of the conference. They were fourth. They were a fourth place team at best, and the women's was like ninth out of 10. You know, so that's where it was when Coach Pat and I took over in 2018, and sorry, 2016, and so part of our objective there was to we need to get some good swimmers into the number 10, 11, 12 slots in the program. You know, and that help us focus on what we needed. Here it's a little bit different, because I don't need to get back to winning conference necessarily, although that's certainly part of the objective. But you know, it's really, really primarily important that we've got some athletes who are scoring at NC2As and relays that are scoring at NC2As. And so that changes a little bit, because it's a little bit more about making sure you've got some people of that caliber who can do that. And that takes a little bit of precedence. So that changes it.
You know, yeah, and when we talk about development, and we've heard Bob talk about this a couple of times on a couple of different interviews, just the way some of the power fours are shifting with more of that pressure win now. And the coaches that we've talked to, it's been a mix on how they view the transfer portal. You know, some coaches are very excited about the transfer portal. There's going to be a lot of talent out there. They can't wait to get in there. In other sports outside of swimming, the transfer portal is even more important, if not everything in recruiting. You have such a rich history of development. You've obviously taken, you know, these athletes right out of high school and blown them up in terms of time. Where do you fall on the balance between the transfer portal and development? What do you lean more toward?
I mean, at the end of the day, we all have to be true to ourselves in terms of, like, as a coach, like, I've got to be who I am, you know, and like personal growth as an athlete, as a human, as a student, professional, pre-professional, like, those are all critically important to me. And I just don't see that ever changing. So, yeah, you know, in some sense, like, I don't care if it's a transfer or a freshman or, you know, some Israeli guy who's 22 years old after army service, like, it doesn't matter. Like, when you leave here, I want you to be better with more tools in your toolbox. You know, like, that's really important. You know, our team's got two rules, like, make yourself better and make those around you better. Like, that's it. Every team value we've got, and every, you know, smaller, more meticulous rule we've got, like, they all flow from one of those two categories. And so, in, you know, big overarching sense, I don't really see that changing. It is an interesting time, like, this year in particular. Like, I will say also that in swimming and diving, like, we enjoy one of the lowest transfer rates in the NCAA, compared to other sports. And it's one thing I appreciate about our sport in general. So I do like that. This year is a one-off, I believe. At least I hope it is. It just in terms of, there's going to be, I think, a lot of people in the transfer portal, because of roster caps and cuts happening. You know, I do foresee that stabilizing. I don't think that we're going to turn into a sport all of a sudden where 40% of, you know, NCAA swimmers and divers hit the portal every March. Like, I don't think that that's true. So, you know, to turn into all of a sudden a program where it's like, oh yeah, it's going to be all portal, all portal. Well, it's like, well, okay. I mean, you might benefit from that this year, you know, when the SEC, they've got to take their men down to 22. That might be helpful. But as a forward-looking, like, paradigm way of doing business, I don't know that that's necessarily the best. Time will tell. We'll see. But
Yeah, that's the way I look at it too. I think this is a one-off event where we do have maybe just a, you know, a little pop of talent that's kind of going to make its way down because of roster cuts. But I don't see it being a continuous trend. You know, in football, you have to recruit your team as much as you have to recruit new people to come in. So you're constantly trying to keep that team in place for the next year. And that is a wild assignment to have to take on as a coach, to know that your athletes that you have right now, you have to work to keep them. And I don't
That's a
think
good
swimming will have to.
reminder. I mean, maybe not, Jamie, but that's a good perspective, you know, because, like, we all, at some point or another, we all follow the big money sports, like, and like, we're whatever, 5 to 10 years behind. But, like, yeah, you know, that's probably a good reminder for all of us coaches to listen to. That's a good perspective. It's like, hey, don't forget to, like, keep selling it, you know, in a positive way. Not like, but, like, yeah, like, you know, the more you communicate and convince your current athletes that, yeah, like, this is working, like, that's, it's not bad, you know.
Yeah, you know, NIL money, name, image, likeness. It's not that swimming is just getting, you know, $1 billion poured into it with NIL, but there is a little bit that flows here. And believe it or not, we do see a couple of swimmers that actually do make their decisions based off NIL, which is really wild to me that it's happening. I don't think it will happen in mass, but you know, I think there is always that risk that you can transfer. You can swim next year, and there is a little bit of money dangling, at least for the very, very top end, which now this is the game that you're playing at Arizona, right? You're in the Power Four world now. So it'll be interesting to see if that ever comes in play for you I mean, let me ask that question. Do you think NIL money will ever come into play at Arizona or your competition or your recruiting?
I do. Yeah, I do. And you know what's really interesting right now is the level of like the number of teams that are reportedly moving into a space where they're going to have 16 or 18 or 22 full rides. And so that's not exactly NIL money, but then you start asking questions like, well, okay, the teams that aren't at 22 full rides, is there a way to compete? If so, what does that look like? So yeah, I think NIL money, which is, as you probably know, it's going to be moving through a clearinghouse moving into the future. So it's going to be well vetted, and it's not just a free for all anymore. It's got to be a fair market value income. But yeah, I do see that there is a place for that to be a powerful tool to be able to compete with programs that are fully funding their entire roster.
Yep. Okay, so let's dig in on the Big 12 for a second. So the Big
Yeah.
12, it looks completely different. So you arrive and everything looks different now. Texas dominated for years, and I was telling you this before we got on. I didn't realize Texas men never lost a Big 12 championship in 28 years. They went,
Yeah.
28 for 28, which is just wild. But now they're off to the SEC, and you've got Arizona, ASU, and Utah have all stepped in. So, do you think this makes the Big 12 more exciting? Do you think, I personally think there's more parity now. I think conference championships are going to be incredibly exciting. We knew how it was going to end last year in the Big 12. This year, I think it's going to be a little closer. What do you think about the conference and how it's headed from a swimming perspective?
Yeah. Well, we'll see. I mean, this year we've obviously scored it out pretty meticulously, I'll let the fans at home score it out for themselves, and see where they think it's going to land. But it is by far of the four big conferences the most wide open in terms of you want to always feel, I mean, swimmers know this intuitively, like you want to feel like the work you put in can move the needle. That's a really important feeling. If you lose that, then motivation wobbles. And that's a cool thing about the Big 12 right now. We really feel like whatever work we put in, we're going to be able to get that back out of it in terms of like improving our performance, climbing that ladder, being at the top of the Big 12. So that's cool. That's motivating for the coaches, that's motivating for the swimmers and divers. Like that's a really important piece of it. What remains to be seen, of course, is it's pretty clear that like the other three conferences, the battle lines are pretty firmly drawn. Like where they all stand. Those programs are all like fairly in stable positions in terms of like who's expected to be first, who's expected to be fifth, whatever. With the Big 12, like, are we gonna be at the same level as that those other conferences? Like if you look at what it takes to make top eight or top 16 in our conference versus this other conference, will we be as good? And I think that remains to be seen. I don't know that that one's been set yet. I'd say this year, right off the bat, probably not yet. I think the distance between an Ilya Kaloon at the top for ASU and like the number 24 butterfly in our conference, like that's going to be a pretty wide gap, maybe compared to the ACC or the SEC. But is that something that as our conference comes together and finds its identity and rising tides lift all boats, as they say, like, do we level that up? And, are we a conference that is comparable to the other three in terms of depth? Yeah, it's certainly the hope for everybody.
Well, I think championships are going to be a lot of fun this year. I think that there's a lot of interesting matchups there. I think it's going to be I think it's going to be a level up from previous years, but we'll see if I'm right. I'm excited about it. I'm sure you're really excited about it. You're prepping right now, right? How's that going?
2 weeks out from today. So yeah, we start two medley relay and a free relay 2 weeks from today. It's a relatively late conference for me. So only 2 weeks between the meet and then the women's NCAA championship. So the 2 week turnaround is an interesting one. One thing I'm excited about, it's been a long time since I have been to a combined men and women conference championship, like since 2010. Yeah. So that's kind of cool. Like, that's a really fun thing. Obviously, logistically, it's a little bit of a bear, but there's always a ton of energy at a combined men's and women's conference championship. So that is something we're really looking forward to be able to travel together, all 60 of us, you know?
Yeah, that is exciting. Yeah, before you were splitting time between the WAC and the Mountain West, so
Yeah, which has its challenges to, you're always leaving some coach behind and, trying to write 18 workouts while you're, getting ready for finals for the other half of the squad, So, yeah, so it should be fun to have everybody together.
nice. So let's talk a little bit more about the Big 12. So I think all the Power Four conferences have some roster limits coming. What is the Big 12 settling out on their roster limits for swimming?
It's going to be 30 men and 30 women. So it'll be equal. Just to clarify for any listeners out there, like at championships, divers count as a half of a roster spot, but that is not the case when it comes to roster limitations. So, like, a diver is a whole person, of course, and even things like, I get a lot of recruiting emails or messages where it's like, "Hey, coach, I'm just looking for a walk-on spot." It's like, no, man, like, a walk-on spot's a spot. Like, that doesn't matter if you're on a full ride or nothing. Like, a spot is a spot. There's no such thing as like a walk-on that doesn't count towards the roster limitations. So those all count. The one thing we're not really sure, we probably won't know till April when the dust settles on this House versus the NC2A, is what about like spots for like people who are having to medically redshirt? So if somebody's got a medical problem, can you move them out of that 30? So that raises an interesting question. It's like, well, yeah, then can you carry 32 or something into the beginning half of the season? And then, if somebody's having medical trouble, they're on the outside of the 30, and you can keep 30 healthy people. We don't know the answer to that one yet. We'll see what happens there.
Yeah, your history at UNLV, you typically kept in the 20s for your active roster for swimmers, and then right now you're in your low 30s ish. What's your sweet spot? If you had there was no house versus NCAA, there was unlimited resources. What is your ideal size team to have in terms of just numbers that you can work with, develop, and then put together that championship team?
I mean, there is no ideal, except that there's an ideal in terms of like your coach to athlete ratio. So that is important. And then there's an ideal based on how many people are scoring either at the NC2A championships, which is currently 18, or how many people you can score at your conference championships, which is currently 24. So those numbers really dictate the ideal. And I guess the third factor, Jamie, is like how many coaches you have in your staff. Like, if you've got one full-time and one part-time assistant, like, well, then yeah, your ideal is going to be smaller. So, and that goes back to that coach to athlete ratio. So I think with a scoring squad of 24 in the Big 12, which is what we are, and divers do count as a half there. You might travel 25 or 26, even 27 athletes. A roster cap of 30 is a little low for that size of scoring squad. That's a little bit strange. Like, baseball team's got 9 people on the field. You would never say like, "All right, you can have 11 on the team." Like, that would be weird, right? So to have a scoring roster of 24 with divers a half and then a roster cap of 30 is a little bit of a strange ratio. Having said that, NC2A's is more important, and NC2A scoring squad is 18, so 30 is a good ratio to that. I think that works just fine, to be honest.
I'm still baffled at 22 from the SEC. That just seems so low. It that would be challenging because now I've said it. I think I've said it two or three episodes in a row. You have no room for error with that. You get a couple of major injuries, or you get hit with the flu across the team at the wrong time, and you just don't have backup. And am I seeing that right or wrong?
Yeah, I think you're right, but I think the decision makers, for them, that factor is not really that important. Yeah, because it's not swim coaches who are making those decisions,
Right,
you know?
right. I don't think
Yeah,
they want to be limited to 22 at all.
right. Yeah, every swim coach in the country fully agrees with what you just said, but that, we swim coaches aren't really decision makers on that kind of stuff.
Yeah. W when we had Coach Dorncott on a few episodes ago, he talked about when he first joined Ohio State, was talking to their AD, and they were talking about the ideal roster size, and they did that research on, the historically, this is how Indiana, this is how Florida, this is the number of athletes they've had on the team. And if we want to follow that pattern, we need to mimic that. All that just went out the window. All of that is done now. Now you have roster limits. And I think that's going to be a really interesting challenge moving forward, is balancing that that development versus win now, because you're not going to have that deep bench that you've had in the past, especially when you add in divers. And that's the thing, divers count toward the roster. So
Yeah,
that'll
for
be
sure.
interesting.
Yeah, I think
Okay, so
it'll raise some questions for some teams about like how much do we continue to invest in diving or not. And I think that that's a legitimate concern for the diving coach community. You know, it's like, yeah, there's some powerhouse programs where they may just, you know, if because there's a lot of programs where the head coach is the swimming coach. So there's a bias that's built in there, you know, and there's a lot of really high level diving coaches who are a little frightened by that scenario, which is totally understandable.
Yeah, absolutely. It's and it diving is its own world. It's a but they're getting caught in the wake of all of this as well, and it's going to be interesting to see how that evolves too.
Yeah, no doubt.
All right, so let's
Sorry,
talk
I
about
cut you off. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
no, let's talk about coaching, how your coaching style. So you've been working on a system for years that's worked out really, really well at UNLV. Have you tweaked that at all now that you're at Arizona, or is it always evolving? Like, tell me how you are evolving as a coach through the changes that you've seen in the water and out of the water.
Yeah. No, it's the right question to ask. One interesting aspect to me is like even compared to 10 years ago, the technological tools we have, like they're coming at you like pretty fast and furious right now. You can't do all of them. And so you have to ask the question. We actually had a staff meeting on this just yesterday. You have to ask two questions, I think. The first being like, well, what's the problem that I see with our athletes? Like what are the problems that stand out? And then the second one is like, which of all these technological tools really is the strongest lever? And what I'm talking about, like technological tools, I mean, you can do, and there's some are quite old and proven, and some are brand new, and there's everything in between. I mean, you know, you can do lactate testing, you can invest in a velocity meter, you can invest in a force paddle, you can, you know, on your hands, you can invest in heart rate monitors, you can invest in something that's like monitors your HRV and your sleep and your recovery. You can invest, I mean, like the list goes on and on. And you know, like you could try to do all of them, but at some point, like unless you've got like a full-time position for a high performance person who is doing all of those things, you know, at some point you've got to choose like, okay, these are the ones, these are the strongest levers, and they fix what we are seeing as the problem. And so that's an interesting conversation, because there's a lot out there. And so yeah, like seeking like I think moving to a new program has given me the opportunity to hit the reset button on that and look at all of them again, brand new, fresh eyes. You know, like the system we had going at UNLV worked. And so that was good. But now it's like, okay, it's a great time to like take a step back and be like, all right, like it was working, but are there better tools, you know? So
And my theory is that, and this is a big part of what Swimintel does for research, is researching not just what happens when they get to you in college, but what were they, how are they training back in high school at club level? And I think that there is a setup that the club coaches do for you, that helps them acclimate their freshman year and then even, progress through, because we've made no secret about it. There are clubs that produce athletes that have huge time drops through college, and then of course there's the opposite. So you've had in the past, you have been remarkable at identifying talent that's going to progress. Do you look at the clubs themselves and what the clubs are doing with those athletes when they're in high school to help you understand how they're going to fit in your system?
Yeah, I think you have to. Yes, I definitely do. And that doesn't mean that you pass on an athlete that is, at a club where they're probably very close to their ceiling already. Like that could be the right athlete for your program at that time, but yeah, you have to look at what they're bringing to the table and what factors, not only in training but in life, that may have affected their improvement curves. And then, there's no exact science there. As you can gather the data and make some projections, but there's a lot, there's too many factors to pin it on. Okay, it's they lifted in high school or they didn't. They, like it's like, yeah, we picked up a young guy who we think's going to be really good, and he came from Maui. Well, the guy barely competed for a year because of all the fires on Maui that just destroyed that poor community, and it's like, well, yeah, like how good is this guy going to be? It's hard to say, because there's a lot of factors there. But we think the fact that he couldn't train for a year, and now he's back on track, like probably gives him a high ceiling. So, okay, like that's that there's all those X factors you have to weigh,
Yeah, I think that I think we need to do a better job of recognizing and rewarding those club coaches that get so much out of those athletes and they go on to college and continue that same curve. Because you can become a gold medal USA Swimming Club, win now, and then just kill the kids and they don't want to swim anymore, right? That's a way to do it. And I think some club coaches might be motivated for that, like, this is what happens this season. But there are some club coaches that I have just infinite amount of respect for that don't just win there. They focus so hard on setting those athletes up for success at the next level, and they do not get enough credit for what they're doing. And hopefully that's something that we help to bring to light at Swim and Tell.
Yeah. Well, and it's, I mean, swim clubs are a business. So if you're in a crowded swimming market, and you are able to thrive as a business while still developing athletes who have their best years in college, like that's a very tricky balance. And I agree. Hats off to club coaches who can do that.
That is a great point, because a lot of people don't think about the business of clubs. Clubs are typically private entities. They can be nonprofit, but they're still trying to make payroll, right? And so a lot of it comes down to enrollment. And you think about, it's a complicated equation for a club to produce athletes that thrive at the national level while in high school, as well as keep the enrollment up, and then develop them so they're ready to be passed to you. And if you think just the challenge of when do they start developing their athletes? Do they start them when they're 9, 10, 11 years old? Are they just really good at developing seniors? But in the end, they still have to make payroll, and a lot of people don't think about that. How many coaches do they have on deck? How many kids per lane do they have? Are they financially stable? Because if enrollment's low, you may not have a coach next year, right? And I think it's more complicated than people realize. I think that everybody's just focused on their athlete and getting their athlete to the next level. But those club coaches, man, they have a lot to deal with. So again, a lot of respect for what they do.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, same.
All right, so let's shift gears for a second. We've talked a lot in past episodes about in-season swimming in college. Does it need to be more exciting? Do we need to change the format? Do dual meets make sense? As a head coach, do you like the format the way it is? Do you like the dual meet format? Coach Parisi talked about how he really likes invitationals. They're more similar to conference, and he's doing more of those. What do you think about the way we do it in season now? Do you want to change things up, or do you like the way it's going?
Yeah, it's tough to change dual meets up without and what Brian said is an interesting point, because he's like, yeah, I'm not here to change the dual meet system. I'm just going to have less of them and I'm going to go to more invites. So that's I think in line with what I'd expect from Brian in terms of just like thinking outside the box and going his own path. The paradigm is the thing. So it's like, if you got an ISL paradigm, like you can make dual meets more exciting because they are the thing. But right now, our paradigm is that NC2As is the thing. Like, that's where you get ranked. That's where you win. That's where you show your athletic director, like, hey, we're doing the right job. So, yeah, so what's the focus? You know, like, if the focus is NC2As, well, then, yeah, it's tough to change the whole dual meet paradigm, I think. Like, it's kind of got to exist the way it is to some degree.
Yeah, it's interesting. You get these really wide variations of philosophy around dual meets. Some coaches, you never see them put on suits except for the traditional midseason and then championship. Other coaches like to swim fast all the time. Where do you stand in terms of just swimming fast? Do you like your kids swimming fast at dual meets, or are you saving that for those,
Yeah,
midseason and end of season?
I have a little bit of a yin and yang answer for you there, Jamie. Like, I mean, fast swimming is always good, you know? Like, is there value in, you know, working really hard to execute something when you don't feel perfect? I do think there is. And so on that side of it, I trend a little bit more towards the traditional in the sense that, like, yeah, you have to put some level of work in so that you have to step up and go race speed. Even if you're not feeling perfect and still execute well and, you know, and not worry as much about the time, you know? So that I think is still my philosophy. We take a long arc to the season, with fewer peaks. So that's the overarching philosophy. You know, having said that, you know, like things like suiting up like routinely, well, it's like, yeah, like the suit changes how you float in the water. It changes your stroke count. It changes your execution. So, yeah, so is suiting up a lot like a part of the process of being ready to be your best at the end? Absolutely. You know, like just sort of like full on garbage, you know, is also bad because then same thing, your stroke count's different. You can't hold your rate. Well, that's equally bad, you know? So we gotta use meets as rehearsals. And so then you have to hit a sweet spot in terms of being able to step up and perform to at least a certain level. Otherwise, you're also not getting the benefit of it, you know? So, you know, but like, I'll give you an example. Like, this gets into your, like, we had a dual meet in the fall with a team that, you know, on paper, we're probably a little bit better than. We lost that meet. And it's like, okay, like, yeah, you know, like, was that a miss? Like, did we not prepare well, or were we just working really hard and they were a little fresher? I think that was the case. Time will tell in the end at Big 12s and NC2As, you know, but like, I'm not gonna lose sleep over that. You know, like I'm not gonna regret pushing my team hard at certain points of the season. You know, we had a really close dual meet. This was an interesting one. We had a close dual meet with Minnesota 3 weeks ago. And yeah, it was really interesting because we came down to the last relay. We won both relays. We won the women's. We split the guys' relays. We went 1-2 there, which we needed to do. And so we ended up a few points ahead on each side, but diving was still going on. So the meet wasn't over. And so everybody rushed over to the diving well. And like, it was cool because it's rare that you see diving get like a bottom of the ninth kind of scenario, you know, but that's what it was. It's like, you know, we were all doing the math, and it's like on the women's side, our divers needed to get this and that in order to win. And then, you know, the guys' side. And for me, from my perspective, it was really cool. Like the divers felt the energy, the whole team was engaged. Like I really loved it. And I was talking to my friend, Coach Kelly Creamer, who's the head coach at Minnesota after the meet, and his perspective was different. He was like, man, that was terrible. He's like, because, you know, he's like, did you notice the spectators or the administrators in the stands? You know, like, A, they didn't really fully understand what was going on and what hung in the balance. And B, like everybody rushed over the diving well, and most of the spectators didn't. They peaced out, you know? So he's like, what a missed opportunity. He's like, that would have been way better if, you know, we could have like done the last relay and everybody knew that last relay decided it. He's like, that would have been more exciting for the spectator. So that was interesting to chat back and forth with him about that. And this getting a little away from your like suit question, do you suit, do you not, do you swim fast, do you not? But I think it pertains to your overarching question of like, are dual meets exciting enough? Do we keep them the way they are, you know? Because it's not that often that you get a dual meet that comes down to the last events and everybody's kind of sitting on the edge of their seat. Let's be honest, most college dual meets are not that way. So
And like you said, it's not like most scoreboards show you the tally. And if you're relying on Meet Mobile, well, I mean, we all know how that goes. I mean, you may or may not load for you, right? So why do we not just put the score up on the scoreboard? Like the only sport that doesn't do this, and it drives me nuts. But when you get dual meets like the one you just described, those are awesome. Those are so fun, and that's that opportunity to pull the spectators in and engage with them. And make that ending exciting. And I think that's a great example of where little things that we miss sometimes in the sport. You talked about dual meets being a rehearsal. How do you at the end of a dual meet or an invitational, what do you and the coaching staff do? Do you guys go back through and debrief on every swim? How do you evaluate performance, and how does it change maybe what you do in the water the next few weeks with swimmers that either are or are not on that path that you want them on?
Yeah, we definitely do that. It's really important. And you know, like I think there's a few stages to it. There's the ride after the meet, you know, and then there's like the car ride home, and then there's like the Monday morning, you know. So it's like you know, what you notice at each of those stages is different. I think all three can be beneficial, you know, like when you just wrap the meet, like, okay, what's on your mind? What's on your heart? Yeah, you got to talk about that as a staff. And then, you know, a car ride home, like I was leaning over the seat of the bus on Saturday after getting thumped by ASU, you know, and like, hey, Amanda, what'd you notice? You know, like Coach Amanda Beard, you know, it's like, and then, you know, and then we absolutely Monday morning staff meeting, it's like, okay, like let's make a list here. Like, what did we miss? How do we do better? What was a win? You know, and that's a really important process too. We had a benefit. We've got you know, somebody working with us in a consultant capacity, and that's cool because they were able to kind of watch the meet on Saturday from the stands, just like eye in the sky, not worrying about, because you know, as a coach on the pool deck, like a lot of what you're doing is relational. Talking to athletes, you're engaging, you're teaching, you're correcting, you're motivating, you're picking up the pieces, you know. And that's your job as a coach on the pool deck, you know. To have somebody like eye in the sky, like watching from the stands, you know, and then that was a part of my debrief process as well. You know, it's like, okay, spent half an hour on the phone Saturday night with him. It's like, yeah, what'd you see? What did I miss? You know, and that was really actually pretty productive. Like yeah, that coach said some things I was like, right, good point. I miss that, you know, because you're just in it, you know, you're just in it. And so I think all of those levels of analysis are very, very important. And then I think I've done a better job, certainly this year, but even in last year, like, you know, just being like to make it a systematic part of what we do to review video one-on-one after every competition. Like that's not something that I think 10 years ago I was taking the time to do. But we do now, and it's that's really productive as well, because it gets to your point, your question rather, about like does it change training? Well, yeah, like I've got a main set plan today. It's Tuesday, we're suiting up this afternoon, and I watch a video with one of my guys who swam 100 fly, 100 free, and he ain't doing that set anymore because we watched some stuff. I was like, you know, and he noticed a few things, you know, it wasn't all me. Like we're sitting there watching it together, and he's like, look at my stroke rate. I was like, good point. Like, you know, so we designed another set for him today that's gonna be a different focus, you know? So yeah, it definitely affects it.
And this is a great point. You talked about earlier, it's coaching staff to athlete ratio, right? And if you have 90 swimmers on your team and you have two coaches, it's really difficult to give that kind of individualization because you
You
just
can't
don't
do
have the
it.
time or resources, right? So this is where you do need, and this goes to the student athletes and the parents too. You want to look at that, where you're going to swim at. It can be absolutely an advantage. Of having extra sets of eyes, even if it's a consultant in the stands, being able to point some things out that because you've got a lot of swimmers in the water and you're dealing with a lot of things on deck. So that's a wonderful point. It's a wonderful point. Okay, let's switch gears to the last question. So Arizona's got a lot of really great athletics, and I ask this question every time. Outside of swimming, what's your favorite sport to watch at Arizona? What do I got to go see when I visit you out there?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, like I'm a little bit different answer on this one, Jamie. Like, I'm probably not your best resource because, like, you know, I'm a little strange. Like, I love sports that don't make any money. You know, like that's my
Well, I do
jam. You
too.
know, like,
I'm
yeah.
with you on that
But
one. Wow.
you know, we just won the national championship in triathlon. Like, we've got the number one collegiate triathlon team in the country, and they're obviously they share a facility with us clearly. And so just in terms of all the sports here, they're a really close squad to us. But I love their energy. I love their coaching staff. Like, I think that they're, and it's a super fun emerging sport. Like, it's not emerging in terms of like triathlon's been around a long time, but emerging in terms of NC2A competition, you know? And so yeah, I think they're just a really smart squad, and what they're doing is pretty top level just in terms of the world stage, which I find pretty cool too, you know, like it's like, yeah, like that person in the water right there, like yeah, they're gonna be like you're gonna watch them in the Olympics in LA, like you know, they're pretty top level outside of just collegiate competition, which I find super motivating as well. You know, Arizona swimming and diving has always been based on that paradigm. And so I love that about our triathlon squad. So anyway, I mean, that's my pick, but you know, as you probably know, our baseball, softball, basketball here, they've been pretty top notch for a lot of decades, you know, so those are always fun.
There's no shortage of sports to watch in Arizona. No
Yeah, no
shortage.
doubt, no doubt. And it's kind of cool because it's like there are no real pro sports teams in town. And so, yeah, it's all Arizona sports, which is a fun vibe. Like, you know, like it's like the community shows up for everything, which is cool, you know?
That's what makes it a great college environment right there.
Yeah,
I love that.
no
That's why
doubt.
there's nothing like college sports, and that environment is so much fun.
Yeah.
Coach, thank you so much for being on. I really appreciate you taking the time, the insights. I know you're getting ready for conference, so that's going to be really fun to watch. Good luck the rest of the season, and we cannot wait to see how you guys do.
Thanks, Jamie. Appreciate the time and just all the conversation.
All right, awesome. Thanks, Coach.